Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, good morning, Jim, and I always enjoy our Friday mornings together, along with our listeners out there in, we can never figure out where it is. In
Cyberland.
Cyberland. Okay, I like that. Okay. A special for those in Cyberland.
Yes, you will be assimilated. We have a question from our one of our continuous fans, Michael. Michael says, hi, Bob. With all the money printing going on, is there a possibility of hyperinflation coming?
Well, that's the popular view now. And what it is that on the business cycle, we got to a point where a lot of the deflationary forces of the last few years sort of backed off, and there were some shortages and with following COVID and stuff like that. So then prices have had a pretty good pop. I guess the high was 7% rate of CPI inflation. And to compare this, in 1920, on that big commodity boom, I think the U.S. Inflation rate got up to about over 20%. So this one is 7%, let's say, and it's backing off. Maybe it's down to about 4% now. Really isn't as terrible as we've seen in the past. Now, can this go to hyperinflation? No, I rather doubt it, because the hyperinflation we saw in a modern economy was in Germany with the Weimar inflation, 1922 to 1923. Well, it was financially a minor country. It had very little depth of financial markets, not much. And the post-war reparations penalties they resorted to, actually, the printing press. And there's images of people going along with wheelbarrows full of money, currency. So, yeah, that was a self-induced money printing rage. And then in November 1923, they decided, oh, let's not do this anymore. And they quit. But during that hyperinflation, there were a couple of economists who then took the real rate of money supply and some BS stuff and said there wasn't enough inflation. So it was just one of those crazy periods in time. But you can't get that in the U.S. because it's a senior currency. There's a huge debt. And the problem is more likely deflation. I just read one recently that the U.S. Commercial banks are still stuck with a huge bond position on the big reliquification idea of a few years ago. There's too much financial problems to get into hyperinflation in U.S. dollar terms. Now, there was
Yeah, another part to the question here for Michael. I'm worried about single-family home prices continually going up in Florida. What are your thoughts on hyperinflation and on residential real estate prices looking forward?
Yeah, on residential real estate prices, they've been buoyant. But again, the boom is still on coming out of the COVID lockdown. And there are some signs that this is getting overdone. And perhaps somewhere in the next quarter, we could see the U.S. economy beginning to weaken. And then that would put paid to the boom in residential real estate prices. And it's worth, I should update the because there's a price index out there for residential. I think it's had a peak, backed off a bit, and is sort of testing the highs now. So it's no longer going straight up and is possibly working on the top.
A question here from Seamus O'Goddard. Bob, did we get addicted to historically low interest rates, and are current rates actually where they should be if you want to encourage some savings?
Oh, now, real rates, the best way to approach this one, Jim, is real rates, where you take the nominal interest rate and adjust it for the rate of inflation. And in a great financial boom, that number comes down, and it got down to about minus 0.40 a few years ago, a couple of years ago. And now it's up, it's the increase, it's a 2.5%. So the increase, you can say, is roughly up to, the increase is 3 percentage points in the real interest rate on the 10-year. And that has been quite painful. You know, people complain about just how much it costs to service debt. Well, on 5 previous great financial bubbles, and in the senior currency, now dollars, it used to be sterling, the typical increase, Jim, has been 10 percentage points. Which is hell, and it actually is Mother Nature's way of punishing those who were excessively exposed in the party in the credit markets, and that includes the central banks, who are still stuffed full of long treasuries, or at least 10 years, and they've also suffered some losses already. So the leading central banks, their powers are tremendously impaired by being on the wrong side of the bond market. So, hey, nothing can be fixed. So I think that there's no chance of hyperinflation. And the residential real estate prices, along with commercial, along with agriculture, are likely to get hit and then roll over and decline for quite a few years.
Now, a couple of things we discussed before we went on air was the problems at Boeing and their quality control. And I was saying I have a cousin coming up from Seattle. He was one of the very last quality control managers at Boeing before he retired. He said, after me, there's no one to second check the planes because they're going to the Westinghouse model, which means employees check their work because they found their washing machines went from 90% completely correctly done to 95%. But my question is 95% good enough for an airplane?
No. I of course, got an interest in Boeing because it's been such a fabulous company. But maybe 3 years ago, the board of directors went out and bought something like $40 billion worth of stock, you know, and buying stock out of the market, which was a stock speculation. So the board of directors became stock speculators, and it was very much a wrong issue. So then they spent huge capital on stock speculation and then didn't have the depth of money needed to properly engineer the 737 MAX. That's where you had the first two fall out of the sky, and then problems with them since. No, the problem at Boeing is that the board became stock market speculators and were no longer heading up a key engineering company. I believe Boeing can get back online, but it's going to be very painful, and they have to have a complete change in the board of directors and get more engineers involved and cost guys and whatnot on there. And otherwise, airplanes are just going to continue to fall out of the sky.
Well, the CEO of Boeing says he's stepping down at the end of the year, but you don't need to organize a GoFundMe page. He gets a $50 million payout, plus who knows what other benefits.
So that's the stock market rot continues.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry to see that.
And also taking a look at the job situation south and north of the 49th parallel, the U.S. Gained over 300,000 jobs in March. Canada lost jobs, boosting the unemployment rate to 6.1%. Why the diversity when the two economies usually are pretty closely tied together?
Yeah, I think Canada's rolling over into a recession, and the U.S. recession is being deferred just by, you know, the rebound out of COVID lockdown, and along with a jillion immigrants, plus a still easy Fed. And as you point out, the rate of immigrants coming in is probably ending its growth. And the financial markets will close the window on Fed ease. So I think a recession is highly likely, probably become visible in the first quarter.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Bob Hoy. Bob, your first headline, Fed rate cuts in 2024, stock market melt up continues.
Yeah.
A melt up? Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, the street, for some reason or other, including some very big names, really believe that when interest rates go down, it's very good for stock markets. Except if you step back and look at financial history. And when interest rates go up, it's part of the boom. And when the boom is on, stock markets go up, while like treasury bill rates go up. And of course, treasury bill rates going up, the Fed follows with rate increases. I mean, they don't set the market. They follow the market. So here we are, the 6 month treasury bill set a high in the middle of August, came down a little, and now it's increased a little, but not to new highs. So, it sort of looks on the chart like it would like to go down, which would confirm that the economy is beginning to contract. And then what happens is that stock markets go down with falling interest rates. And if you look at the chart, there are times when the fastest decline in the bill yield is charted with the fastest decline in the stock market. But here we are now, and I collect them, the headlines, is where big names are saying that, all's going to be well because the Fed's going to cut rates. It's sort of an intuitive call, and not based upon evidence. The evidence is that short rates go down, the stock markets go down. So reviewing the 6 month treasury bill rate, the high was in August. It declined somewhat and then increased over the last few months, and looks like it wants to go down. But you can't say that the downtrend in market rates has started, but the potential is there. So at one of our future blog interviews, we'll probably note that in a few months' time.
Headline, the stock market's Magnificent Seven is now down to the Fab Four.
Yeah, that goes
right
back.
Right here, our Fab Four.
Wasn't that the Beatles?
Yes, it sure was.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the headline. That was at the Wall Street Journal. They crafted a terrific headline that the Magnificent Seven is now the Fab Four. So a couple have seen their best. So, yeah.
Well, that means only four major stocks are supporting the whole stock market. Is that not what this means?
I think you're right on that. Those big cap stocks are enough to push the S&P. So, yeah.
It looks like I've taken a yellow submarine down.
Yeah, headline companies.
You can put that with the Beatles' Liverpool accent.
Headline. From the Financial Times, companies rush to issue bonds ahead of U.S. election. What's the story there, Bob?
Oh, they're I think the key in the headline is that they're rushing to issue bonds. The market's reasonably good for it, and they're doing it. And somebody dreamt up the headline that they want to do it before the election. On the election, it looks like Trump's going to win, in which case I think you're going to find greater responsibility amongst many, many facets of government. So it's just a headline and the key thing is that that corporations are floating a lot of new issues of bonds.
Our next two headlines deal with Chinese real estate. Vanke leads slide in China developers, and headline, Country Gardens extends sales slump as financial woes pile up.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. We have Vanke, mm-hmm. and then we have our long-term friend Country Gardens, and their collapse is being covered with headlines.
And the Chinese government so far hasn't done much to bail them out, which some people expected them to do.
Oh yeah, no, this is gone. It'll even impair the government's ability to do things, and their central bank is hopeless, and all those sort of things. Yeah, yeah.
Now, two headlines concerning electric vehicles. First headline from the Financial Times. The big worry for car makers, what if the EV slowdown is not a blip?
Yeah.
And ex-Chrysler CEO warns EVs are not going to make it.
Yeah. It was an incredible fad that people became concerned about evil emissions coming out of tailpipes on internal combustion engines. So they got off on battery-powered vehicles, and just the whole combination of mining the rare earth elements and all sorts of stuff to make electric batteries for these cars has been an insult to the environment. And then you've got the actual battery itself, which with lithium in it, which is a very lively element, is subject to blowing up all by itself and making a very strong fire that's difficult to put out. So the idea of being pure and virtual, and by using a battery-powered car, is the opposite, an environmental insult, and then an environmental insult with when they try and dispose of the batteries, or when the batteries self-ignite and burn away for a couple of days. So it's been an impractical fad. And the fad for buying EVs, I would say, is now over. And we just had a couple of headlines here that are questioning it, yeah.
J.D. Power did a survey of why people are not buying EVs. Three main points were brought up. Range anxiety. Canadians and Americans drive extraordinary distances that people in Asia and Europe don't do. They tend to stick very close to where they live. Whereas somebody said in Regina, we think nothing of driving all the way to Saskatoon for lunch and then back. And a friend of mine from Toronto says, yeah, that's because you have to. secondly, cost. They're still very expensive. And third, the lack of charging stations. And last summer, apparently, there was a huge lineup of Teslas at the one working charging station in Hope as they hoped to get across the Rockies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. No. And then if they actually had enough charging stations, it would overwhelm the power grid because you're using a large amount of power to recharge the batteries. And also, you can't really rush recharging batteries. The companies advise that you don't want to put too many rush chargings into these things because it screws up the batteries. So it's totally impractical and is coming under a proper economic scrutiny.
Now, apparently Toyota is working on a much better battery that holds more of a charge for much longer. And they hope this battery will also be more affordable because it uses, I think, sulfur instead of lithium.
Yeah, well, head of Toyota a few years ago was absolutely right on in saying that the EVs were not too practical and a fad. But I think this is the publicity department at Toyota having to come up with some sort of novelty item in order to be credible. So, no, I think it'll all fall back to very efficient internal combustion engines.
In Ontario, they had an EV truck factory that was about to open, and now that's delayed, and people have been laid off.
Yeah, you had something like 5,000 pounds of battery in those things. And you had wires here and wires there, and even just hitting a fender in a collision pretty well, you know, made these things highly risky and inoperable. So, no, it's been an uneconomic fad. And fortunately, the fad is fading. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I always have this number handy. An EV uses 277% more copper than your internal combustion engine vehicle, 83 kilograms or 183 pounds of copper.
Yeah.
It's like adding a whole big passenger.
Yeah, yeah. No, the pitch has been, and what the public is focused on, is the purity of the exhaust pipe, in which case, with an EV, there is no exhaust pipe. So they think they're being pure, but the whole operation is is insulting to the environment.
Now, of course, we're not preaching to the converted here in Vancouver because Vancouver is the Tesla capital of North America. There are more Teslas here than anywhere.
Yeah, because not a huge demand for air conditioning through the year, and then it's not cold, so then you don't have that problem. But I've read some stories about electric vehicles or electric pickup trucks in colder climates, and it's really very difficult.
Yes, Edmonton bought a fleet of electrical buses that failed to work in the cold. Edmonton can go down to minus 60.
Yeah, it can get very cold.
Yeah, so.
But also, I think it was somewhere where some city had bought 5 or 6 battery powered buses. And there's an image of one igniting, and there were 4 or 5 of them parked side by each, and then the fire just spread and burned them all up. So I think that the impracticality of EVs is finally getting through. It's not worth the expense.
Well, also, I think they're just totally rushing this technology, imposing deadlines. In BC, within 6 years, you're supposed to be only to buy new electric vehicles, no internal combustion vehicles.
Yeah, well, by the time we get there, the BC government is likely to change to more of a conservative government, and they will realize that this is absolutely impractical and push that legislation off the books.
Well, it took how many decades to get off horses. The automobile invented in the late 1800s, but even in the Second World War, the German army was still very dependent on horse-drawn artillery and supplies. The Allies were using mules to get supplies through hilly mountainous regions and so on. So it took a long time for the internal combustion engine to take over.
In Vancouver, the McGavin's bread was delivered to the door by a horse pulling a van. Also, the milkman had a horse and van to deliver milk.
Yes,
As I say, 1940s in Vancouver. I remember it as a kid.
Yeah, and into the 50s, we still had what we called horse pucks on the street.
Yeah, horse buns.
Yeah, horse pucks for all of us street hockey people. And our final headline we'll take a look at is office tower vacancy rates hit record high as zombie buildings litter skylines of cities. Toronto, it's nearly 20%. In Vancouver, it's around 9% for office buildings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The market has changed there, and the overcapacity is amazing. So there's going to be, as they call them, I think it's an appropriate term, zombie office and residential towers.
And for people still using office blocks, you have to offer your employees a lot of amenities to get them to come back and commute for an hour and a half both ways to come into an overcrowded city. One of the fallouts, though, from COVID and the lack of people in offices is how many closed small shops I now see in downtown Vancouver. Little boutiques or coffee shops just don't get the business anymore to stay alive. Another thing that they don't factor into inflation, and it's a killer in Vancouver, are super high property taxes.
Oh, yeah. No, the state is making things more expensive. They have too many layers of bureaucracy requiring forms and special permissions and everything else that slows down the provision of or the development. And this is what Polyev, as leader of the opposition, is going on. He will provide incentives to the bureaucracy to pass the permitting of any sort of new, you know, residential construction.
Well, Vancouver's solution to problems in the city is just to hire more PR staff at over $100,000 apiece a year. They have well over 40, and they find all kinds of excuses about why you can't talk to the mayor. To find out, well, when we had Gregor Robertson, he spent almost as much time visiting foreign cities to push his environmental theories as he did working at City Hall.
Yeah.
Something like almost a year out of his 11-year term was spent outside of Vancouver. And he missed all the major blizzards, by the way, too, visiting girlfriends in Taiwan and so on. You know, so what does he know about it? Also, Robertson made a point of riding his bicycle everywhere, but behind him was the mayor's car with all of his documents and so on, a briefcase, and he had an official helmet owner or holder for him. So when he held a news conference, the guy would be standing there holding his bicycle helmet for him.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, like shows one thing, but what kind of impact did he really have on the environment?
Yeah, well, there's a member of parliament in Ottawa who does that, gets driven in so far in an SUV, and then she gets out and gets on her bike and rides the last couple of blocks to work, you know. I mean, at the parliament, there's so much fakery going on out there.
Also, April 1st, all the MPs got raises in Canada. They're now the second highest politicians in the world, second only to the U.S. The prime minister makes over $400,000. Pierre Poilievre, the official leader of the opposition, makes a penny under $300,000 a year. Are these people overpaid?
Well, Trudeau's personal wealth through his trust is about $79 million. I looked it up.
So he could easily just donate his entire salary to charity.
Wealthy. It's like Trump donates his salary when he was president to some charity.
Well, it's a handy tax deduction, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Bob, always fun chatting with you.
Yeah, we look forward to next week. Yep.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy, the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.